Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 839. It's the 4th of August 2017. On the podcast today, I have Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, AST's ticker there, and Colin gives us an operational update regarding the commencement of test production at his gas field in Slovenia. Also on the podcast, Charles Cully Cavanis, Vice President of Finance, and Whit Childs, who's a geologist at Highlands Natural Resources. And the guys there talk about their upcoming drill at their Denver prospect. By the way, ticker there is HNR. Also on the podcast, Connor Campbell, Financial Analyst at Spreadex, looks at Intercontinental Hotels and TUI, who are both releasing results next week. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, AST ticker. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. It's great to be back talking to you again.
Yeah, I'm sure there are lots of investors out there who are glad you're back in the podcast there, because because you're on social media as well, you probably get a lot of questions, a lot of queries. I mean, Ascent Resources is getting that fever pitch of interest around it. You know, I can't even log on now, so it's just Twitter without seeing your ticker, AST. You must get a lot of queries, don't you?
I do. I get a lot of comments and questions from shareholders. I think everyone's very, very interested in when we're going to get everything up and running at last.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I know there's a lot of people who know exactly what you do, but just for people who may have tuned in, first time ever, and they're not sure what you do and don't understand why there's so much interest in the stock, can you just give a brief summary as to what you're all about the business, please, Colin?
Sure. Ascent Resources, we are a European onshore gas company. We've got a field in Slovenia on the border with Croatia and Hungary. We've been in country for about 10 years. We drilled two wells 5 or 6 years ago. We've taken us a while to get a route through to market. That happened July last year. We signed a sales agreement to pipe the gas across the border into Croatia, and we're selling it to INA, who are Croatia's largest oil and gas company. Over the last year, we've raised money and completed the infrastructure and the well workovers that were required to get us into production. The announcement this morning was to say that the infrastructure is now all in place. We're beginning test production this morning, and we're hoping to have the certification to send the gas to Croatia very shortly.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I mean, I think it was, when was it? 31st of July, I don't know what day that was. But you get a lot of thumbs up on the last RNS you sent, which was, an important milestone, the conversion of final remaining convertible loan notes. You must have had a couple of people pat you on the back with that, yeah?
That was nice to get that out of the way. Those loan notes were really how the company's funded itself from about 2012 through to 2015 or so. We'd taken convertible loan notes from what was Henderson Global at the time. That announcement on Monday was basically to say that pretty much all those notes have now been converted into shares, and it's great to be able to say that we're not only commencing test production and getting ready to start to export gas to Croatia, but the company's now effectively debt-free, which is very good news.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned the operational update, and so you're saying that it's all in place. So just take us through what you've got this new infrastructure in place. What needs now to be done to complete all this, Cole?
Yeah, so what we've done over the last 6 months or so, we've recompleted well PG10. We've connected well PG10 through to, there's an existing small, it's really a separation facility that's owned by our partner Petrol Geotherms. We've connected PG10 to that facility. We call it the CPP. The CPP then needed some refurbishment. The CPP itself was constructed in sort of the 1980s, so it needed a little bit of care and attention to make sure it cope with the increased volumes that we want to send through to Croatia. So we installed a new separator, and there's been some of the connections had to be upgraded. We've then recommissioned a pipeline that runs from the CPP to a plot of land that we acquired around this time last year, which was owned by a company called Trometa. On that plot of land, the pipeline to Croatia terminates, and we've connected the line from the CPP to the Croatian pipeline, and we got an operating certificate for that last week. All the work's been done, and I posted a little picture on Twitter there. Mm-hmm. So everything's now ready. So effectively, we can flow the gas from PG10 through the CPP, which takes out the water and the condensate, and then flow it on through to Croatia. So that's all in place now. The only piece we're still waiting for to start selling to Croatia is for INA to get an operating certificate on their side of the border. Back, I think it was in October of last year, we got the operating certificate. The pipeline itself runs. There's part of the pipeline on the Slovenian side, part on the Croatian side. And it hasn't been used for a number of years. It used to be used to send gas from Croatia up to Slovenia when the methanol plant was operational. Mm-hmm. So we needed to recertify that pipeline. Last October, November, we pressure tested the pipeline. We got a certificate on the Slovenian side of the border to say that it could cope with the pressures that we wanted to use, and they were happy for us to use it. We got the certificate. On the Croatian side of the border, it's been a little bit slower. They had to wait until we had the final design of how we're treating the gas on at the CPP. They had a meeting with their hydrocarbons agency, I think, last week on the 27th of July. And at that meeting, they went through their sort of project documentation. They requested a few amendments be made, and they're in the process of making those amendments. And once they've been sent through and approved, then we should get the operating certificate on that side of the border, and then we're good to go.
Yeah, so you said that they've had a sort of good meeting last week, and you know the pipeline is fit for purpose. All they need is certification, is it?
Yes, it's just paperwork, because we knew whenever we did the pressure test, it wasn't just done by us, it was done by sort of an official accredited body, came and did the pressure test. We have got the certificate to say, yes, this pipeline can cope with the pressure that we need to send the gas at. So we know it works, it's just a paperwork exercise now.
Yeah, cool. All right then. And I know you're getting a lot of people asking you how much you intend to sell. And when will you know that, Colin? Do you have any guidance at all?
There has been some guidance. I mean, there's a presentation on our website which has some estimated volumes in sort of the rough business plan that I had up there. Mm-hmm. We've had some notes published over the last 12 months or so by Northland and by Stockdale, which contain sort of estimated revenue figures and production figures. Mm-hmm. They all look reasonably sensible. I'm just waiting. What I've said to people in the past is that we'll release production estimates and everything else once we start selling gas through to INA. I'm quite keen to get PG11A, the work there completed, and get that well tested so that I have that well was tested back in 2011, but I'd like to have it retest again just to confirm that it's behaving the same way it did back in 2011 before I commit to a revenue or production figure. Because PG11 itself, we still got the workovers ongoing there. We had a service company arrive down the beginning of this week to complete. There's removing a piece of tooling from the well so that we're able to flow the gas and test it. They've made some good progress this week, and hopefully in the sort of fairly near future we can confirm that PG11A is ready to go. And we'll get that one is... We've already constructed the flow line, so there's a flow line a few metres away from the wellhead at the minute. So once the well is clear and everything's ready to go, we just need to connect one piece of pipeline and it's ready to flow through to the CPP.
Marvellous stuff. And I suppose by the end of this year, Colin, you'd be a fully revenue-generating company, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we're already generating revenue. We've been generating revenue since the middle of April. Mm. So we have interim numbers out which will then give us, there'll be revenue figures in those, but certainly once we start selling gas routine, it will be generating profits, and that'll be a very nice place to be.
Yes, the P word, profit, excellent. Colin, and as always, you know this here, you are the most followed company on Vox Markets. But if there's anyone listening right now and they like the fact that you're going from, you know, you've gone from exploration to development and now you're getting into production, and they like this the process you're going through, but they're not following you yet, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, Colin.
Sure, Justin. I mean, first reason is we're already in production. We're producing gas from PG10 and we're generating revenue. Second reason is the company's now debt-free, effectively. We've got 50 grand of loan notes left. So the announcement on Monday means that we're effectively debt-free. Mm-hmm. And the last reason is we're only a short time away. So we've got all the infrastructure in place and we're a very short time away, hopefully, from starting to send some gas to Croatia, which then makes the company profitable and cash generative.
Marvellous. Good to chat to you, Colin, and hopefully speak again soon.
Thanks, Justin. Good to talk to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Charles Cully-Kavanagh, Vice President of Finance, and Whit Charles, who's a geologist at Highlands Natural Resources. That's HNR ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having us on. We always enjoy having the opportunity to talk on Vox Markets and share our story.
Fantastic. Well, since we last spoke, you've had some news out, and it looks like you're getting things done. You've raised money, and you're about to do some drilling, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do that, please, Cully, though, for people not aware of the story, can you give us a brief summary as to what Highlands is all about, please?
Sure, yeah. The company really has three main projects going right now. The core focus for the near term is East Denver. This is our shale project based in Colorado. It's targeting the Niobrara Shale, and we're just getting ready to start drilling this month in August. So on the back of our last announcements, you know, we announced that we raised 3.25 million pounds in a combination of public equity fundraisings, and then also we raised private equity in the United States from a company called Risa Energy, and we raised just under $33 million from them for up to 24 wells of drilling activity in this Colorado-based shale project. So we're really excited about this project. It's proven reserves, P1 reserves that have been under scrutiny from a number of different third-party engineering firms. And we're hoping to get the drill bit started here in the next couple of weeks. We just announced that we'll be spudding by mid-August. So that's really exciting. In addition, we have Helios 2. This is our project where we've discovered helium and natural gas in Montana. We have actually leased more than 100,000 acres in Montana, and we've made the discovery by drilling a well up there. And the next step is to continue the dewatering process and to try to prove up the commercial and economic prospectivity of the project and then scale it up. So we have on that project a $341 million NPV10 for a success case from our third-party engineers, RPS. And really what that indicates is that if it works, if we're able to prove the dewatering process economically, then it's highly scalable because we have 100,000 acres there. So that's the second project. And the third project, which is equally exciting, is DT Ultravert, which is a technology actually for refracking and parent well protection. We just had our first patent issued by the United States Patent Office. We've been working on this project for about 2 years, 2+ years now, and finally have that first patent. So that really opens up a lot of opportunities for us in terms of how we're potentially going to monetize the technology. Fracking is obviously a huge industry in the United States, and a technology that solves some core problems there, we think has a lot of potential upside. So happy to give any more details and flesh those stories out, but that's the overview of the three core projects. And the focus, again, for the near term especially, is East Denver, where we're going to begin drilling this month.
Excellent. Okay, so you've got Helios 2, which is obviously helium, DT Ultravert, which is the technology of refracking and parent well protection. And you said Denver, which is at the moment your focus, and you've just mobilized the rig and you've got drilling to start. So I suppose the man to talk to here is Whit, isn't it?
That is correct. I can't tell you how excited I am to talk about this. Just a little bit of background on our acreage out here is that we are fortunate enough to have a couple sections surrounded by ConocoPhillips acreage position. This area has been drilled extensively by ConocoPhillips, and they have really figured out what makes this rock tick out here. So we plan
on replicating Conoco's findings and their completions and copying what they have done to create and drill a successful well. As my job as a geologist, I've mapped this area out and studied it extensively. Throughout my career, it's been drilled extensively vertically and horizontally. The vertical wells were drilled in the 70s and 80s, but the benefit to that is that they give us data. Mm-hmm. They give us data about the Niobrara formation, and we've been able to correlate those trends of what makes a successful Niobrara well to our acreage. And the process of drilling, like we've touched on, is we are going to drill a mile and a half down into the earth and turn that drill bit horizontally and drill it out 2 miles. So that's quite a ways. It's a practice that is now common in the DJ Basin. And after we complete the drilling process, we're going to move into the fracturing, the hydraulic fracturing process, the completion part of the well, where we will frack the well with around 15 million pounds of sand. Now, to put that into perspective, that's like putting an entire freight train of sand into the ground, in a mile and a half into the ground. And we're going to do that. We're going to put that freight train divided by 50, so 50 stages, frack stages, and hopefully complete the well and produce it from there.
Excellent. And how long is this process taking?
Amazingly, to drill a mile down and 2 miles out, that the process of drilling will take 10 to 15 days. And after that, the completion crew will move in, and that will take an additional couple of weeks.
Okay, all right. And like you mentioned there, so let's just reiterate there. What do you actually know about this area?
Well, I know quite a bit. Going back to those well logs and the data, the publicly available data, is that you basically look at the curves and I can extrapolate that this area is very similar to not only the Conoco wells, mm-hmm. but the wells in the northern DJ Basin, part of the Wattenberg field, where you have operators like Anadarko, Noble, that the rock up there and down here is fairly similar. That's something that, you know, that we've been able to look at. We've also been able to look at all the different completion techniques and how Conoco has been able to develop this prospect. We've learned from that. We're going to take what their techniques and their practices, apply it to what we have in order to make the best well possible.
And I'll just add that we've been really fortunate to involve a number of third-party engineering firms and get outside views as well. So our internal staff is very optimistic about the rock that we have and the prospects for the wells we're going to drill. And that optimism is echoed by the third-party engineering firms that we've contracted to evaluate the prospect. So RPS has looked at the prospect. McCartney Engineering has looked at the prospect. Throughout the private equity fundraising process, a number of other firms looked at the prospect. And really the conclusion is that we're located within 2 miles of producing horizontal wells that are highly successful. The reservoir is continuous from all data points that we can look at into our acreage. And so this is just a progression of a basically approved process of drilling and fracking these designs of wells. And that's why we were able to get the categorization of proved reserves, which is the most rigorous, conservative label you can provide to oil and gas reserves. RPS gave us 424,000 barrels of oil equivalent of proved reserves per well. And that is a really powerful data point in terms of proved plus probable 2P mm-hmm. reserves, 540,000 barrels of oil equivalent per well, more than 500,000 barrels of oil equivalent. So really exciting to get started drilling and hopefully be announcing some exciting production results really in the near term.
Excellent stuff, guys. Well, listen, if someone's listening right now and they're not following you but like the sound of this news, it's about to be forthcoming. Could you give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please?
Yeah, I think the first reason is just that we have all this high-impact, exciting news coming soon. The drilling is going to start this month, and the results will be announced as soon as they're available. And really, the market should be getting a steady flow of information, which is always an exciting and interesting time to be an investor. The second is that, again, this is a relatively low-risk opportunity from a geologic perspective. We have the proved category reserves from RPS. An investor can go look and find our competent persons report in the prospectus or elsewhere on our website, and you can take a look at all of the studies and engineering that went into that that categorization. And then the third is that we are a diversified portfolio in terms of what we have within the company. There are those three core projects I mentioned, and actually each of those projects individually, if they're successful, would, you know, quote unquote, make the company. They're all very high impact, high upside types of projects, and we think we're positioned well as a diversified company. So I would say those are the three top reasons to take a look at Highlands, and we would really encourage any investors to look at our website. There are videos explaining more about DT Ultravert and all kinds of infographics that they can learn more from if they just take a look at the website and track us there as well.
Yeah, and don't forget, if you go to the pictures about the board, when you put the cursor over, I love this aspect of your website, you go from black and white to colour, which brings you to life. I quite like that. So worth going there just for that alone, I'd say. Need to check out the prospects as well and the projects going on there. Guys, thanks very much for speaking to me, and hopefully, like you say, you've got news coming very soon. So hopefully we'll speak again very soon. Thank you very much.
Justin, we will absolutely update you once we have more to share about the results of drilling. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, financial analyst at Spreadex. You're right, Connor.
Very good, thank you.
And I have the pleasure of speaking to you twice in a week. That's all right.
Yeah, I know. You're very lucky. Yeah.
No. Yes. It's only me and your missus get to do that on the boss. Yeah, the reason why, it's quite obvious actually, because it struck me that you come on midweek and talk about companies with news coming up, but there's only 2 days left really on the Wednesday, so why not do it on a Friday, and then we can look forward into next week, which I suppose is a good idea. Then you can do two, maybe three companies, who knows, maybe just more options, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, next week, Connor, who are looking to release? Because I've got to say, I found it very helpful. Whenever you are on, because I'm trying to position my portfolio a bit more now towards bigger stocks. I've got a lot of smaller stocks. I like a bit of risk. I like a bit of reward. But I want to get some dividend-paying stocks and maybe on a recovery play, you know? So it's always handy to get you on. And while you're chatting, I look at some fundamental, look at the chart as well, see where they're at. And a couple of these have ticked the box. And, for example, you mentioned Flybeer a few weeks back. And I like the look of that. I did some reading up on them, like their chart. I bought some. I'm now up. They're doing quite well. So, essentially, I'm using you, Connor, as my research. So, who's next week, Connor?
It's a bit of a tourism-based week, really. First up on Tuesday, you got Intercontinental Hotels. They've had a pretty good year. Up until the start of June, I think they were on a really strong rise. I think they hit an all-time high of just shy of £45 at the start of June. They've tailed off a bit since then. They've sort of plateaued, gradually crept a bit lower to around, I think, the £42 mark. But your sort of financials have bore out, really, that early in the year rise. In February, it's full-year figures. Revenue is down a bit bigger than expected, down 4.9%. But adjusted operating profit was up 9.5%. Revenue per available room, which tends to be the most important metric in, you know, the hotel business, that was up 1.8%. And most importantly, it announced a $400 million special dividend, and hiked its annual dividend by 11%. So that was some really strong figures back in February. Its first quarter figures in May, again, and the revenue per available room was strong. It was up overall 2.7%. Occupancy was up 0.8%. I think that was record occupancy for the company, actually. And then if you break it down even further, Europe was very strong in revenue per available room. That was up 6.9%. We had a huge 12% increase in London as well. So obviously London is sort of recovered from any kind of, the blip it saw perhaps in the middle of last year around the Brexit. There were issues in Asia, the Middle East and Africa. Things weren't too great. It was only up 0.1%. But Intercontinental Hotels has a really, really strong presence in China. I think in mainland China, it was maybe up 4.9%. And in greater China, it was up 5.3%. That's revenue per available room. So, you know, I guess if you've got that really strong, that's the place to have a strong base now, really, somewhere in China. I think it's one of the biggest hotel chains in China. You know, also over in the UK, I guess its most recognisable chain would be Holiday Inn and Holiday Inn Express. It also announced that its CEO was leaving earlier in the year, but it avoided any, you know, protracted search for a new CEO. But it just announced that its CCO, Keith Barr, was taking over, I think, maybe August or September time. So, again, it seems to be running, you know, very efficiently. It seems to have weathered the you know, the tourism sector hasn't been an easy sector in the last 18 months, 2 years. There's been a lot of volatility in the sector, be it through sort of destinations now becoming places for holidaymakers to avoid due to terrorist fears and things like that, or, you know, even the sort of the drastic currency movements we've seen in the last 18 months has also, especially in the UK, played into the tourism sector being a bit tricky. But InterContinental Hotels has fared very well in the last year or so. Its half year figures next Tuesday expected to continue, really. I think revenues expected to be up 4.4% to 875 million. Earnings are expected to jump 21% to $1.13 per share. So everything seems to be going well for InterContinental Hotels. It is, I guess, it's a bit of a crossroads because it has plateaued in the last, month, 2 months, really. So this half year report next week could either be, you know, the spark for it to go back to those all time highs and continue the kind of gains it was seeing in the first half of the year, or perhaps drag it lower. I guess it's a bit of a moment where it needs to find some direction, and hopefully that half year report will give it that.
Yeah, well, do you know, like I said, it has performed strongly. It's definitely not a recovery play. It's a momentum play here, because it's like in 2016, end of the 2016, is it, what, 20, just over 22 quid a share? And like I said, now, for a big company to double that, or almost double it, 42, no, almost 43 quid a share, it's good going. So I imagine the bosses there are on a bit of a good bonus from that, but yeah, but it's be interesting to see if it can keep going, because like I said, it's been in an uptrend since, you know, pretty much, you know, start of this year, and it's going strong. But yeah, be interesting to see if they can continue that. Marvellous. What else is happening there, Connor? What else?
Well, continuing along the tourism theme, you've got TUI releasing on Thursday. It's their third quarter figures. Mm-hmm. It's sort of been all over the place this year, really, and not its figures haven't been too bad. But investors don't seem to have been very receptive to its updates. It saw a big spike in February as it announced it was selling travel. I think it was Travelopia, which was its sort of like specialist holiday arm. They sold that for 325 million, I think it was euros, to KKR. Mm-hmm. And that spiked it sent it above £12 for the first time since, you know, the first time in a while, but that then was gone the next day, though. It then immediately shed all that value, and it was then trading, you know, below the £11 mark by mid-April.
Yeah.
It sort of jumped to in April. You know, obviously a lot of FTSE 100 stocks got a boost in April because of the snap election announcement that sent them higher. Then in May again, it fell 6% roughly after its half year figures. And the figures weren't too bad. Its pre-tax profit losses, they shrank them by a quarter. That was to just shy of 311 million euros. Its hotels and cruises divisions were both really strong. It also reiterated its full year guidance. It was promising a 10% increase in earnings by the end of, by the end of the year. But there were key areas of concern, sort of that apply really to the wider tourism sector in general, really, you know, stocks like Thomas Cook and stuff like that. Namely, the continued softness in Turkey and North Africa. You know, those areas, traditionally very strong areas for companies like TUI and Thomas Cook, have seen a massive drop-off in the last year and a half due to those aforementioned terrorism fears, basically. And then it was its Northern Europe division was really soft as well. Part of that, you know, the UK holiday makers are suffering due to, you know, the pounds doing well it's doing against the dollar at the moment, it's doing horrendously against the euro. And that's obviously impacting UK holidays makers' decisions on where to go on holiday and reducing their ability really to go to those traditional mainland Europe hotspots. I think, but you know, then since that May report, it's still managed to climb back above £12. It's seen a fairly dramatic rise in the last month and a half, 2 months. So it really needs to produce the goods next Thursday. It really needs to, you know, release some positive news to justify where it is at the moment. And given how unreceptive investors have been to the last couple of updates, I think it really, really needs a few strong headline figures, or at least an improvement in its summer bookings, because its summer bookings weren't great, like I said, in Northern Europe. If they can see some kind of improvement in those with the third quarter figures next Thursday, then perhaps it can stay at the £12 mark. But like I said, it's had a tendency to to drop off.
Yeah, in the aftermath
of its earnings reports.
Yeah, and it's tried a couple of times to break that £12. And when was that? Back in February, it did get it closed at 12.20. It actually went up to 12.30, but still came back into the range below £12. And even if it does get above that, there's a triple top, which is quite a lot of resistance at almost 13 or 12.80, £13. So if it gets above this £12 successfully, which as is at the moment, then it'll still see further resistance there. And to me, I just think, you know, there's a better play than this because, it's there. It's full of resistance, that chart there, around these levels. And it'll have to break above 13 quid successfully to start motoring, you know. But there we are. They look like they pay a decent dividend. But so there you go. Marvellous, Connor. You know, talking about holiday makers makes me want to go on holiday.
Yeah, it does.
Which I'm not on holiday for months now, so it's a bit annoying. But Connor, thanks for that. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks, we'll speak next week. Talk next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at five, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, Coppel. At four, Blur Group, that's BLUR. At three, Colin was on earlier, Ascent Resources, AST. That's at two, N2, which at the moment, last time I looked, was up 200% today. I'll just check now to see where it is. I think it dropped back a bit. It's 205% as I look right now. And at one, Sunrise Resources, most followed company, SRES. I tell you, noted by its absence there, UK Oil and Gas. It's normally in there battling with Ascent the last few days, but it's not there. It's dropped out. Okay, top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours were at five, Blenheim Natural Resources. That's BNR. At four, by the way, that's Holdings and Company. At four, Echo Energy. Echo ticker, interim results, 2017. At three, Anglo African Oil and Gas. That's secondary completion of the Petro Coelho. At two, Echo Energy again, new investor syndicate. And number one most liked RNS on Vox Markets this morning was from the man himself, Colin, who's on the podcast earlier, Ascent Resources, operational update, commencement of test production. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.